Very good morning to you. This is the Wednesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. You can call 4341-790, send a WhatsApp message to 266-4862, 266-IVOB, or you can send an email to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. Michelle Braffett is the producer, technical operator, and I'm Dennis Johnson, your host. We go until 2 o'clock this afternoon. COVID-19, coronavirus. The continuing fight to contain the virus in Barbados and indeed worldwide. And certainly the last 48 hours, I think the focus on the spread of the virus in Barbados has taken some interesting twists and turns. Three of them, I think one more perhaps than the other two, have been the focus of public attention over the last 24 hours. But I'm going to start with perhaps the one that's least attractive and then we'll see where we go from there. On Monday, the front page of the Daily Nation said, authorities looking into three COVID-19 cases in a city sanctuary, the sanctuary of the 30 lost souls. Today's newspaper says that there are four people who tested positive. So we went from three on Monday to four on Wednesday. Where the extra one came from all of a sudden, because it hasn't been reflected in the numbers, certainly, that we've seen. So another one of those cases where numbers are thrown around and perhaps we don't pay attention to it because of just the sheer overwhelming expression of numbers. The second one is the crew member on the cruise ship that came for urgent medical attention. Now, I read both stories and I have not seen in either of those stories whether the person tested positive on the ship and was brought to Barbados for the urgent medical attention, or whether they came ashore for urgent medical attention, was tested and found to have the virus. The reason why I'm highlighting that is because we have ships in the harbor, and I do not know if we have the capacity, either in equipment or personnel, to handle quarantine an entire ship or ships, or major or break, because we know from reading the international stories that cruise ships are a hot spot for the coronavirus. But again, the information is a little short in that regard. The one that caught everybody's attention and have everybody sending messages all over the place, of course, is the naming of the ambassador as being one of those tested positive. And of course, the questions about who paid for planes and whether or not the ambassador was tested here or there is something that I wait. I got a message saying that the ambassador will give a statement, so I wait to see what happens with that. And there are other things that caught my mind that had nothing to do with COVID, but we can talk about it as the morning progresses and we have the time, and you allow me to babble a little bit. Good morning, and welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, sir.
Greetings and salutations to your good self. The man who gets ahead is the man who does more than is necessary and keeps on doing it. Mr. Johnson, sir, it's my belief that Mr. Anthony Wiggins and the humble servant are the only two social contributors to this program that's left from its inception. Therefore, we are familiar with the rules. It's not my intention to hold you into unnecessary dialogue this morning, but last Wednesday, during my conversation with you, you prejudged me. I said in my opening remarks that I do my research before preparing my script. All I had attempted to say was what had been printed in the paper pertaining to the mayor's debated right.
Strayed into the realm that I consider to be dangerous waters. Me, in my personal capacity as both a producer and as a moderator. And let me tell you why. There is something called juxtapositioning that can be just as detrimental as anything else. Classic sang a calypso in which he said, unnamed persons declared their assets and then did certain other things. Two people declared their assets that year, and the two people sued. The problem with saying persons and misappropriation juxtaposes names that would lead people to presume things you did not say, but the juxtapositioning of the names. It is, for example, sir, as if I said to you, about you, are you running in St. Michael South? And you ask me, why do I say that? Bushill late at night. Sir, because of what people associate with Bushill, am I making that comment? We make people assume, especially if I talk about picking up votes, they would make certain assumptions. It's called juxtapositioning. And as a regular contributor to this program, I know you know that. So when I pull those things up, sir, it's not because I want to be contentious. It's because I do not want the public to assume that what you say refers to a particular individual and a particular set of incidents. And you've done it on more than one occasion with members of the Royal Barbados Police Force. And I think you're very well aware of the circumstances under which you've made those claims or mentioned those names. And it is a dangerous practice, sir. And that's all I keep trying to tell you.
Mr. Johnson, sir?
Yes, sir.
You have left me in shock when you said it is the second time that I had attempted to call names. I am fully aware the value of all things, even our lives, depend on the use we make of them. Let me finish my conversation by saying it's better to look where you are going than to see where you've been. Thanks for your patience and understanding, sir.
I thank you as well, sir, for yours. 4341790, you can join us on the phone and have a discussion on whatever is on your mind. The other thing I wanted to mention that crossed my reading, whenever we talk about the poorest nation in the region, the poorest nation on this side of the Atlantic, we usually single out Haiti as being that place. We talk about poverty in Haiti, the fact that they had a devastating earthquake, that people eat mud pies and political conflicts, etc. It was interesting to read that Digicel, filing for bankruptcy, claimed that two markets in the region contributed significantly to their revenue decline. Jamaica, $31 million, and yes, top of the list, Haiti, $47 million. Haiti, the poorest nation in the hemisphere, dropped Digicel's income by $47 million. There is something wrong with my people. There is something wrong either with the reporting, with the figures, or something just ain't adding up. Because I cannot understand how the poorest nation in the hemisphere could spend $41 million with Digicel. And more than, because that's what they lost, $47 million. US dollars. Now, the third case that has been causing all the discussion. It seems strange to me, one, that the decision was taken to identify the ambassador's status. I suppose they would have done so because somehow or other a leak would have been worse. But the question that I had pertained to, was protocol followed? Was the minister tested before leaving New York? What happened to the advisory that we quarantined when we come in? And what happened to our protocol that said don't visit geriatric hospitals and people who may consider to be high risk. The others are, I suppose, fodder for political cannons, but I think it is important when we fight this pandemic that we pay attention to the protocols we have in place, because we've had threats from the czar that loosening the controls, if we don't follow them, would lead to us having to be restricted again, and the opening up of commerce in the city would be affected by it. And therefore, I think it is whether protocols were followed or whether protocols were breached that, to me, would be the more important thing to focus on. However, we focus on what we want to focus on. 4341-790-266-4862, or you can send an email to brasstax@starcomnetwork.net. Brasstax, good morning. Brasstax, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Am I on?
You are.
Yes. I want to have a dialogue with you, please. I believe in Barbados housing is a big problem. What is your conception about that?
What do you mean by it's a big problem?
Pardon me?
What do you mean by it's a big problem?
Well, there are many people who are trying to get some sort of land to build housing. And I know this has been going on for years. And they have not got any attention. I heard a gentleman said some years ago that there are plantations out there that are willing to sell at 75 cents a square foot.
In Barbados?
Yes.
In 2020? I would question that.
Well, listen, if you check back, well, 10 years ago, a little before the government lost power, the same government now, there was a program on the ear, and
10 years
I don't
ago.
Want to call names. I don't want to call names, but it was said on this said airline, Airways, and he said that they can you can buy a plantation, willing to sell at 75 cents a square foot, and the government can put in the infrastructure and sell at $3 a square foot and make a profit. Are you hearing me?
So I am listening to you clearly, right. And I am trying to tell you that I do not believe that that was ever a feasible proposition, either then or will it be so now?
What I am saying to you, land has been sold in Barbados at 10 cents a square foot already.
When, sir?
To the people who used to rent land from the plantations a way back.
When was that, sir? And that's my point. With the increase in the cost of land in Barbados, land under $5 or $10 a square foot in Barbados has been few and far between, no matter how many governments have tried to keep that figure to a manageable level. Government has had to intervene and try to sell land at prices down around the $10, $15 range because they're trying to improve the lot of Barbadians and give them quote-unquote affordable houses. But with the available land, the use of it for building other types of housing arrangements, those figures are few and far between.
But Mr. Johnson, I'm not saying that they should sell it. No, at that I am saying to you what has been said at that time. I am not saying that they should sell land at 75 cents. I believe that can sell land at least $3 a square foot.
In Barbados?
Yes, sir.
Sir, I could tell you there may be people who want to buy it, but I don't know there are people who want to sell it at that price. That's the comment I'm making.
I agree with you I agree what you're saying, but I'm saying it can happen because there's so many plantations in Barbados. I believe it's over 30 plantations that are out of everything. There's only on them is grass, nothing else.
Sir, and let me tell you that those plantations that you consider to be under grass, I am sure That is not because they want to sell it at $3 a square foot. It is because they certainly want to sell it at perhaps $300 a square foot, or perhaps even more. So the challenge with putting land and housing development together is twofold. For example, the town planning department, either the chief town planner or the deputy chief town planner or the acting chief town planner, one of those three names, made a comment some time ago that there was enough land for housing in Barbados currently available without having to cut up any more agricultural land. That was said. Now, that being said, the question then would be, why is that land that's available for housing, that is enough for housing in Barbados, not available at a price that makes it attractive for Barbadians to buy? That has been the bug in, I think, most government arrangements over the past, I don't know how many years. Because you keep hearing that there is adequate land for housing in Barbados without cutting up plantations. But every time the discussion comes up, we hear people are subdividing agricultural lands for building houses that sometimes either not getting sold, or we're not sure who they're being sold to or at what price.
But Mr. Johnson, if you look to Barbados, if you go to Barbados, you will know that about 30 or more plantations that used to have food and everything on that, all they have on this is land, because it's agricultural land. And I understand that agricultural land, even if you buy a whole plantation, an ordinary person came in and buy a plantation, they will only buy that if they want to make a golf course or something like that. And no poor body can do that. Nobody can do that. And people in Barbados are telling people that they should plant food. What they can plant the food on? Where is the land? When the government give people 3,000 and 4,000 square feet of land, how much land is that? An acre of land having 43,560 square feet. So when you get 4,000 square feet to build a house, tell me what can you do if you try to build a reasonable sized house? You don't have any land, sir.
So here's the difficulty for me. There is a perception with Barbadians of a certain age that a housing spot is X square feet by X square feet, that the house is X feet by X feet, and there is space at the back to build back and up and to raise some chickens or grow something. That housing concept has been eroded over the years because developments have taken place that have not followed that pattern. You have high-rise housing, you have government-subsidized high-rise housing, you have places like the villages at Coverley, and you have changes in the concept of agriculture, where people are being encouraged to grow on smaller areas using different types of skills to grow things. So you have pots and using windowsills and various other ways, tires, various other ways of growing. So what you make available for housing, what type of housing it is, and the price at which it can be constructed have changed over the years. So the component of the cost of land is just one of the reasons that some people are not able to build. Two, the cost of building comes in. And then three, the type of house you want to build and where you want to build it. So when you talk about housing in Barbados being difficult, that's why I asked you, what do you mean?
What I'm saying to you, Mr. Thing, the government, as far as I can see, or how I have been seeing, they prefer to bigger houses and offer you at $150,000 or a little more than that, or $120,000, and expect you then to get them. Your neighbor would have to get a mortgage or something like that. Mm-hmm. And if you have to get a mortgage, they can give you at least 15 years or 20 years, and you have to be a certain amount of age. You have to be at a certain age.
Correct.
To get that mortgage.
And income.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of that, if you look at it carefully, you have to pay at least over $400,000 or $500,000. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying, and it make it difficult. And therefore, you have to be, you agree, there has to be a certain age group to get that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult. I believe that land can be much cheaper than $20 and $15 and $20 a square foot.
Sir, your belief is not held up by fact. And what I'm trying to tell you,
reasonable doubt, Mr. Johnson.
Sir, the reason why I'm telling you this, sir, is because the ownership and the reason why the land is being held and the opportunity to make more off of it is what is driving the cost of land and housing in Barbados up. So if you drive around Barbados today, you will see, I don't know, countless properties with for sale signs on it from multiple real estate agents.
Yes, you're right. I see that.
Sit down and do what I did. Since
that's
I got nothing,
the price gone up.
No, since I don't have nothing to do, I sit down and Google the various real estate agencies in Barbados and look at prices, right? And you will see house in St. Philip, 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom, 6,000 square feet of land, 195,000 US. Are you serious? No, a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom house in Barbados, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So I know a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom house in Barbados in 1980 sold for $32,000. $32,000 Barbados. The last price it was offered was $250,000, right? Because that's what has happened to the cost of housing and land in Barbados between 1980 and 2020. That kind of spread. So when you have all these properties that are half-built, unbuilt, died, and people don't know who owns them, selling for $195,000 US, the mere fact that it's stated $195,000 US almost tells you that they didn't want you to have it. I get that impression when I look at it. There may be another reason for quoting US dollars, but when I see it, that's the impression I get. When I consider a affordable 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom, 6,000 square feet house in Barbados, I think in 190,000 Barbados is on the top end, not even the bottom end, the top end, right? But yes, if sir. That is the base, 195,000 US, after that, sir, if you're 45 years old, right?
Yes, sir.
And you wanted, for whatever reason, to purchase a property, maybe because you're waiting on the old lady to dead and leave you the property and she ain't dead and leave it to you or she leave it to your brother, so you finally decide to try to get a house at age 45. You think you could buy a house for $195,000?
No.
That's only 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom. It ain't that you're bringing in, you know, 12 people. Is you heading into retirement, so you want a little cottage to settle down in. You can't afford $195,000. And that is where we are. So if you have those properties sitting down there, waiting on somebody to offer $195,000 US, the possibility of you selling land at $5 a square foot is pie in the sky. Pie in the sky. It's not going to happen. Because everybody wants to get the most they could get for the little pieces that they have sitting down there. And that's where we are, sadly. And then we talk about the banks being extra liquid and people have plenty of money and people not paying rent.
I believe that the government can buy plantations, and I believe their plantation of their willing to sell. The ordinary person cannot do it, cannot afford to do it. They cannot. They're not able, and they can do if they talk about if they want people to really get. And if they have the land, and they're selling it even at least $10 or $12 a square foot. The land will be sold. I'm sure about that. It will be sold, and this is my problem in Barbados. Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you as well, sir. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Sir Dennis.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I was here. I didn't laughing. Really want to call.
Well, I wish you would, because nobody...
After I hear the talk, I said, look, let me try and get in here. I'm going to point the line, the light. I said, good.
Yeah, the lines are very light. It's,
now,
it's me.
The first point, oh, okay, David, and house job. Now, you will hear callers call you. And says about the regular callers. Now, I only come in because I take up the line. I find it was free.
Mm-hmm.
Some people is your regular callers just keep this program going.
I know that.
Right. But you know the time that I took yesterday when I called. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, but that's the way I do that for me.
Yep.
The time I was waiting. Mm-hmm. Right. It seems that though some people believe that the regular callers is getting different than anybody else.
No, they don't. But some have ways they use.
Exactly. I just tell people openly, they ask me how is it getting. I said, look, the first thing I just do on morning, is from the time the program come on, I dial. If I hear somebody speaking and they go off, I dial. That means the line gone free. Mm-hmm. That's common sense. Now, let me deal with this land thing. It is not only land, Dennis. It has amazed me how people just look at yesterday and look at today. That way, I'm doing a lot of research now. When houses, as you said, I knew when houses were selling, wall houses that government would sell for $20,000 and $30,000.
Good ones too.
Yes, those houses that were once selling and things
were
selling for $20,000 and $30,000.
Correct. Correct.
And let me say this: nobody asked what the salary was at that time. A civil servant would get about $300 a month. I remember. Them motor cars. I had a Datsun.
21,000? 18,000? 9?
Hello. Morris 1,000, and then you had the Morris 11, then the $2,800.
That was 3,000, right?
1,200 Datsun.
Was how much? 9?
$4,200.
What year was that, sir? I know when the Datsun 120 Ys came out, they were about 9,000. And that was 1970 something.
9,000, 10,000.
Yeah. Well, are you beginning to wonder where you're going back to?
But I talked about the 1,200 Datsun and the.
Yeah, I remember the square ones. Yeah, the square ones. They were about 4,000, 5,000. 4,500.
That was 4,000 and 5,000.
4,500. 4,500, yeah.
4,500. And I remember I had a Hilmer mix, second hand. I pay them $500 to pay $50 a month.
I got to give you this. I got to give you this because I have it here. Don't move yet. We're talking about house and land, right?
Yes.
When I came back to Barbados in 1981, Selby Rosen Mapp had designed houses out in for a pilgrim. I still have the promotional material. The mortgage on one of the houses in Frere Pilgrim was $575 a month. $5,000 down was the deposit. That was in 1981 when I came back to Barbados. What is the cost of a house in Frere Pilgrim today?
Anyway, all right.
Let that fly.
But let me go a little further.
Mm-hmm.
We had a massive house development, chattel house development in the 70s, led by Joy Edwards. Late Joy Edwards, DeCosta Edwards, and Miss Rock. A new brand to gable board house was a $4,000. You hear what I tell you?
Mm-hmm.
$4,000, new brand, Miss Rock. All Miss Thing would drop on the house for you. A new brand board house today is about $80,000. So you got to look at the time, the times. Look at the salaries. I remember I'm glad that this topic was raised. I remember I did an exam, finished in school to work. I had to go up park instead of sit the test to be a health inspector. Then they called me and tell me I passed the exam. You know the amount of money they tell me that they would pay me every fortnight.
$500?
$50 every fortnight.
50, 50?
5 not. But at the time, I was doing assistant payroll clerk at Clark and Tucker getting $300 a month. That is what you see in those days. A lot of people leave the government service.
Right,
and then it's the private sector. Now, if you tell people about these prices, the wages that was paid then, they won't believe you.
Well, I think they should because two things. One, it's not only the wages, it's the buying power. And you would find...
That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, it's the buying power. And you would find... You would find, for example, that in a lot of cases, persons who retired and thought that their pensions would have been able to support them through their old years found themselves in a lot of trouble when prices started to skyrocket. Houses that were bought for, like the one I mentioned in 1980-81, for, you know, $30,000, $32,000 needed repairs, and the repairs were over the $35,000 or the $32,000 that you were paid for the property. And pensions that sounded reasonable when they got it, you know, $1,000 a month was, you know, affordable. You suddenly couldn't live on $1,000 a week.
Dennis Clark, that was the former general secretary.
Of the NUPW, yeah.
Of the NUPW.
Mm-hmm.
He taught when he was at West, and it so happened that both of us met at Clark in Tucker. He worked with equipment and supplies. I work in payroll. Mm-hmm. And his salary wasn't much different than mine. I just said he was getting 300. He probably would have gotten about
500 or 600.
You understand?
Yeah.
People got to understand how the shift, the dynamic shift. You could have taken a motor car and drive the gas. There's a $20 for the gas easy time.
Correct. And it would last you about a month too, depending on how much driving you did. Provided you live in St. Philip and your girlfriend is here, Lucy, it could last for about a month. No, but the other thing, though, and this perhaps is the, to me, the more important factor in all this. One, we didn't have as great consumption of electronic equipment, and the cost of electricity was not as high then as it is now. I think that's why I mentioned the issue with Haiti. Because when we talk about per capita income in Haiti and people eating mud cakes and the poorest country in the hemisphere, we measure per capita income.
Yeah.
But when you have a company like Digicel that provides communication equipment, phones and cellular service, and could lose $47 million US in Haiti, it means that a lot of the wealth or the wealthy people in Haiti spending a lot on cellular phones and cellular phone communication equipment and the use of the equipment. You can't tell me there are 50,000 people in Haiti, 50,000 out of the entire population using Digicel to the tune of $47 million US dollars. It has to be wider than that.
Now, today, utilities bill.
Yep.
Light
it's
and water.
Water more so than than the others. But yeah.
Let me tell you this. In the 70s, a lot of people did not have running water.
Running water or
and,
indoor
and
toilets.
You know what was the price? $1.25 a quarter.
Right.
And a lot of people did not have. When I built my first house, Dennis, Light and Power had a program. Because what they were doing is trying to get as much people to get involved in. I believe they wanted to take off some of the power that they were producing.
Mm-hmm.
I got a house wired by Light and Power. A man by the name of Farley used to operate a tire shop in Charrobridge, was part of the service. $50 to wire a three-bedroom house. The material and everything. You could believe that?
Yeah, I could.
All right, now that is enough for pricing. Now, let me go on to the most important subject that I see in mind. Our country has to be more knowledgeable and has to play a more part in decision making, not only in this country, but in the Caribbean. I sat down and I start to study the social development in the society. And I can come back and we can have a serious discussion on Caribbean politics. But I want to deal with Barbadian politics first. You know, I came along and I heard people say, oh, Sir Grantley is responsible for adult suffrage, which is right. He caused the poor man to vote. Now, Arbar came and he caused the young people to vote at 18. Because when the adult suffrage was introduced, you could not vote unless you had property or you were over the age of 21. But he made it possible during adult suffrage for the 21 of age without property to vote. Now, Dennis, I can ask you a simple question. Look at the two systems that came into power. The 18-year-old that dropped from 21 to 18 and the adult suffrage to 21. You think that was held to the electorate or to the politician themselves? Give me an idea.
I think the persons who benefited from it were the politicians. I don't think lowering the voting age really benefited the voter in any great way.
I said that. I do my research and I study it over and over. I said, look, this adult suffrage was to enhance the powers of the grantee, so therefore he dropped it because it was the planter class. And if the average worker could vote, he would be able to become or remain in power, call it maintaining his dynamism in politics. Then it dropped to 18. Albarn knew the young people was gravitating toward the Democratic Labour Party, so he utilized the age. And it's time that we sit down and pick these things down to pieces so that we can understand
it. It's not important. It's not important to us, sir. I have a piece of information for you, though. Because of your challenge the last time on the CCJ matter, I have been doing some digging up on the Chaffette case and the other cases pending. And I have to tell you, there are some interesting twists and turns in that particular saga. I don't think it's going to return to the good old days of the high awards, but the interesting questions that have emerged from the people I've spoken to about it is, one, does the CCJ actually have the jurisdiction? Because at one point they said they didn't, and now they did. Two, whether or not this question of benefits, which is what I think the tribunal in Barbados wanted a reading on, whether this benefits and the time it takes to get a judgment from the tribunal or even the law courts. The employers say it's unfair for them to carry the burden, but I think it's equally unfair for the employee to carry the burden. I don't think the court has answered that. So there are interesting things about that case that I'm discovering, or the cases, to answer your query whenever you decide to bring it back up. I thank you for your contribution, sir. Someone says, boo-hoo-hoo, we live in a capitalist world. Nice nostalgia about prices. I paid 25 cents for bus fare to go to school, but it's $3.50 now. What has caused all of this? I say loss of value, but some say, nah, increased value. There ain't no increased value to traveling on the bus, sir. What's the increased value that you have a padded seat instead of a fiberglass seat? Not your value. The difference is money has less value today than it had back then. That's my quarrel. We can argue about that over the beer. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. G.
Good morning, sir. And how are you? Very good call to get after talking about value. You timed that well.
I don't know. I might go and spoil the show.
Spoil it.
You were going great just now. I might go and spoil it. But value, no. We have it. Value will be maintained as long as there are taxes, because you have to earn the dollars.
To pay.
So the value don't go down.
Correct. I can't disagree with you on that.
You can buy less with it.
17.5% of 5 million is a lot better than 17.5% of 5,000. I'm just saying.
Well, listen, I was listening to you all with great humor just now. And I said, $300 a month, we was getting a lot of money. I was getting $150.
Are you real old, though? Or you had a poor paying job?
I was working for my father, so he said,
oh, your father exploited you, man.
How much more money could you possibly want? You're living at home, and I do it here.
That is the key to it, my friend. Is the key to it.
No, but Mr. J, the problem with you on 50 was one night at Alexander's and it was gone. So I was broke for the rest of the month.
You knew you had too many friends and fine ladies to take to Alexandria.
That's right.
See how I know all your business from your spending? Look, the truth is, though, this question of how we have increased costs without necessarily attaching any value to it is something that perhaps one of these days brilliant minds like yourself could sit down and do a dissertation on.
Oh, good Lord, brilliant minds.
What do you mean?
Well, no, what I call you about now was a stupid little thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you will indulge me, that is.
I got plenty of indulgence today. The lines have decided they ain't calling me today. They had enough. They had enough of me for the month. Go ahead.
I want to give a short story, and I can beg you to help me at the end of the story. Mm-hmm. It's very short.
Mm-hmm.
And this story starts in the year 2015, one night in the year 2015,
mm-hmm.
where I flew up from a dream, sweating profusely, and breathing hard. And my wife looked at me and she said, "What's the matter?" I told her the dream that I just had. And then we shook our heads and went back to sleep. I said, "What madness was that?" Well, that was in 2015. And in 2015, I knew it was 2015, Mr. J, because a couple of years before that, I had been writing some silly little stupid economic stories and sending them out to people via email.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2015, I wasn't doing any of it. I was, singing songs, thinking about things, walking the park, all that sort of only song. So I didn't write anything in 2015. And then lo and behold, early in 2016, between January and March, I had the same dream again, the exact same dream. I'm not telling you all what the dream is. And I didn't get all flustered this time because I had it already. And I went to my wife and I said, "Listen,
the dream is coming back
again, a recurring dream." You know, when you're in recurring dreams,
the wife should banish you.
I'm going to call into Brass Tacks and talk about this dream. My wife says to me, "No, don't do that." And I said, "Why not?" She says, "Because I can think you're crazy." I said, "You're sure crazy, or maybe just a little bit missing the point, missing the plot." Anyhow, to move on from that story, along came COVID. Oh, no, I didn't call into Brass Tacks, but I continued writing little stupid, unimportant stories up until 2018. Then I took a lull again in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And then along came 2020, and COVID-19 put us all in shutdown. And listening to the radio, including Brass Tacks, I started hearing a lot of things about things going on in the economy. And I started to see unicorns and pink elephants. So
you really need to go BlackRock.
I said to my wife, "Well, I must be losing it. You think I might be losing the plot here a little bit?" this is terrible. Anyhow, I said, "Well, the basis with that, what I'm going to do is write about it."
Right.
So I wrote one little article and sent it out. And then I picked up the pen and started a second one. And the second one was called "The Economic Consequences of COVID-19. And as I got into about the third paragraph, maybe, I said, "This is nonsense. Who do you think you are? You see your joke.
Governor Central Bank.
Tell me the consequences of COVID-19. Well, he wrote the consequences of Churchill and consequences of the peace and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "No, boy, don't be a fool. You're losing the plot. Forget it."
And the plot was?
I scrapped it.
Mm-hmm.
I scrapped it. No, this is where you need your help.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. I will try.
I scrapped it. I said, "Man, I might be really losing the plot." So, no, Mr. J, let me ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
If I were a carpenter,
mm-hmm.
and you, Mr. J, hired me, don't go there, and you, Mr. J, hired me to fix your deck. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I arrive at your house and I pull out my toolkit, and I take a piece of lumber out of the truck, and I take a nail out of my toolkit, and I take the hammer out of my toolkit, and I proceed to put the hammer down on the block of wood and scrape it with the nail, scrape off all the rust with the nail, might you not think I could be losing the plot a little bit, just a tad?
No, not if you have a goal in mind and you trying to drag me along.
Yeah, I'm trying to drag you along. You know, I would think now you might be losing the plot a little bit. So what now? Instead of that, I'm still a carpenter, just fixing.
Yes, it is.
What if, Mr. J, you had the power to hire me to fix the economy because something was going wrong with the economy? And what if the economy was a beautiful piece of embroidered cloth? Huh? And the tool to fix the economy was a lovely machine, and I had the ability to use this machine. And I reached into my toolbox and I pulled out the beautiful cloth, economic cloth, and it said, social and economic well, prosperity and well. It's not that well. I needed to finish it. And then I took out the machine to complete the embroidery. And rather than do that, I took the cloth and started cleaning the machine. Wouldn't you think that I've lost plot a little bit?
I think you're going a little wacky and that you need to go back to the, the hammer and nails. I would think you need to go back to the hammer and nails. What have we lost the plot on this time, sir? Where have we gone wrong by you?
Let me just throw this last one out then and leave everybody.
And leave everybody to figure out, hit it with the hammer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to watch myself. Can I get myself in a lot of trouble?
Well, you could.
Yeah, I probably have. It has been said.
Mm-hmm.
Governor Central Bank alluded to it. That we might, because of COVID-19, we could be looking at double-digit falls in GDP.
The GDP. Mm-hmm.
Now, the greatest fall in GDP that we've had since 1975. This is the time I used 1975 because that's when we became a currency sovereign, not necessarily 75, 76, not necessarily a monetary sovereign, but a currency sovereign, where we had our own currency. The largest fall we've had from then to now was in 2009 at 6.7%. That's the largest fall we've had in GDP over that entire period. Now, it is significant that that was 2009 because 2009 was a financial crisis, the largest financial crisis since the Great Depression. Now, COVID-19 is a much larger crisis than just that. It's not just simply a financial crisis, although it could morph into one. At that point in time, 2019, I can just throw the numbers. I have assumed that I am given accurate numbers. They're not mine. I usually take them off the central bank and do a little arithmetic with them.
Mm-hmm.
We, at that bear mind, a fall of 6.7% in GDP. The government of the day, the private sector of the day, were able to run balances, financial balances, profitably. They maintained their small profit at that time. The external current account fell by some 4-5%. And the government ran a fiscal deficit of 10.3% of GDP of the day. How are we going to run a primary surplus of 1% if we expect a fall in GDP of greater than 6% without that doing damage to the private sector?
Or printing money?
Well, I don't use that term.
I know. Supporting government expenses, as the central bank is supposed to do.
Once you run a deficit, you're right. The central bank is expanding.
No, but because, sir... Because we're practicing theories and we're making projections based on unknown quantities, and we're balancing it by saying, I'm on that extreme, this would happen, but if things improve, this would happen, and on the balance of probabilities, and using these types of terms that make it appear as though we'd be right either way, depending on which side the coin fall. Of course, if it falls on the edge, we're in a lot of trouble.
You got, yeah. You get my point about the cloth thing.
I get, sir, I always get your point, though. No matter how you twist and turn, right? I'll sit and wait on the horse to straighten down the... I'll wait on the horse to get into the final bend, and then I know where it's going. I have learned to listen. That's one of the things I learned.
We're supposed to use the tool, not polish the tool.
Not polish with the tool.
You know,
yes, sir, I got your analogy.
So that bit, I've been hearing a lot of talk yesterday, actually, when Peter was on. And there was talk generally about that, the government's revenue falling. The government won't make it. The only government revenue that government really. Government, let's call it what it is, taxable income.
Income. Sir, and that's why I said we get the impression that sometimes that there's this entity called the government. There's a money tree, and we shake it, and money falls out of it. So people keep saying the government needs to spend more money on this. The government needs to do that. The government needs to give me my income tax return. The government, the NIS, needs to pay this. The government needs to do that. At the same time, you have people unemployed, so they're not paying NIS. They're not paying VAT. They're not paying income tax. Businesses are closed, so the government sources of revenue are contracting. We don't have visitors coming to Barbados, so the foreign exchange spend that the merchants would use to buy the things that we want to buy from them, not there either. But we keep expecting that money is going to rain in from somewhere. I don't think we get the big picture yet. So, yeah. Your analogy of the cloth worked. For me, at least I know where you're going with it now. WhatsApp message says, permit me to ask a question or two. Why in this current era are we still hearing people mentioning the likes of Adams and Barrow? With all due and the highest respect to their names, they're dead and gone and only being held on to by persons clinging on to a legacy that's no longer relevant in today's current climate. What relevant are they to the average person in the 30 to 40-year-old category? I respectfully say none. In a climate where persons benefited from education, union representation et al., and are still finding it hard to find jobs with their expansive qualifications, and those with jobs not being able to find security of tenure, reappointments and promotions, and in fact losing jobs, the mentioning of their names and the reminiscing of walking with them, knowing them and being in their presence then means nothing to those in the above-mentioned category now. My response was that those names, I think, are depended on to add luster to political organizations that perhaps some people believe the current members don't add the luster or the appeal, and therefore you go back to the titans that held them up on their shoulder. When I look at the politics of the Caribbean today and listen to the various prime ministers and members of the leaders of the opposition talking, you look back on Barrow, Burnham, Manley, and their vision and the way they articulated their vision, and with all their swagger and sometimes their up from the great beyond for saying so. But anyway, the ability to, you know, drop the hammer and have people cringe. You know, we say, yeah, I remember back then. You know, and there are people back then who would tell you, I don't like none of them names you just called. We prefer the current leadership. They're more palatable. So sometimes we look back and, you know, we see things the way we remember them and not perhaps the way they were.